This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In a few minutes, we're going to celebrate the life and work of beloved Vermont writer Howard Frank Mosher. We'll be joined by two of his friends, the filmmaker Jay Craven and the novelist Jeffrey Lent. And we'll hear your stories and tributes as well. They've been pouring in all weekend. But first, we want to get up to speed on what President Trump's latest executive orders mean for Vermont and what the reaction has been like over the past couple of days. I'm joined now by VPR News Director John Dillon. Hi, John.
Hello, Jane.
So on Friday, President Trump signed executive orders that apply to immigrants, foreign visitors, and refugees. And the quick summary is that this main order temporarily halts immigration from seven Muslim countries, and it suspends all refugee admission for 120 days. Additionally, it has put an indefinite hold on refugees from Syria. There's been a lot of confusion over whether green card holders from those seven countries are allowed to re-enter the country if they're currently abroad. And that's been interpreted in different ways depending on who you talk to. Now, over the weekend, the ACLU won an injunction to allow people who were in transit when the order came down to enter the country. Often these were people who had been detained at airports around the U.S. John, do we know of any Vermonters who were immediately affected by this order in that way?
We don't, as of right now, know of any Vermonters turned away or detained. But we do know, as we just heard on the news and as we've been reporting, about an Iranian professor of religion at Middlebury who is a permanent U.S. resident, but AP Associated Press reports that he is staying in Iran, decided to stay there rather than risk being detained and deported if he and his family tried to re-enter the U.S. Of course, the city of Rutland is directly affected, as are all the people who were trying to come here.
So I'm curious if you can get us up to speed, John, on what the members of our delegation to Washington are saying about all of this, because we've been hearing around the country from different politicians. What are Patrick Leahy, Senator Sanders, and Representative Welch saying?
They put out a statement late Friday saying, just basically deploring this action, expressing outrage and concern. They pointed to Vermont's track record in resettling refugees. The state's taken on about 750 people since 1988 from many different countries. They say if cities like Winooski and Rutland want to welcome people and asylum seekers, the president shouldn't stand in the way of that. And then Representative Welch was in Burlington this morning, and he said he's never seen action by a U.S. president so damaging to traditions of religious liberty and sort of open acceptance of people seeking asylum. Here's more of what Welch had to say.
There is no debate about the necessity of vetting people who come into our borders. There is no debate about acknowledging that the primary responsibility of our government is to protect the safety of our citizens. There is no debate for me about the absolute wrongness of having a religious ban, and that be the determination upon which people are allowed to come in.
So that was Representative Welch this morning. He was asked, well, this, you know, the president says it's not a ban on a specific religion, and Peter Welch believes that it is because of the preference given to Christians and the restrictions on countries that are predominantly Muslim.
What about Governor Phil Scott? What's he saying?
Governor Scott is going to be in Rutland today. He's expected to announce specific steps the state might take. He's very much in support of immigration. He's from Barrie, which is a city that has been settled by many generations of immigrants. And he pointed, as the delegation did, to success Vermont has had with people from other countries resettling here, Somalis, Vietnamese, Bosnians, Bhutanese. And he's been defying the president on this, but it's not clear what exactly the state can do in the face of this federal order.
And we're going to have more reporting on that. We're broadcasting live in the noon hour in anticipation of some remarks by Governor Phil Scott, and we'll bring you more about what he said later this afternoon in All Things Considered. I'm speaking with John Dillon, our news director, and we're looking at responses from Vermonters to executive actions by President Trump relating to immigration and to refugees. Members of the legal community in Vermont have been offering their professional support over the weekend. Tell us a little bit more about them.
Right. So the Vermont Community Law Center says it's going to offer free help to individuals holding passports from the seven countries affected, And they are and they're asking people to contact them. And more specifically, the Vermont ACLU is saying that there are things that the Scott administration can do in terms of sharing information between our local law enforcement and the federal government.
Or not sharing.
Not sharing,
the case
may be. I think it's exactly what they're talking about. So a person's relative status, legal status in this country is information that perhaps should not be shared, they're saying, with enforcement people at ICE and Customs and Border Patrol or Homeland Security. They're saying that there are, in fact, things that the state can do if the state doesn't agree with this policy. So we'll see how Governor Scott responds to that today.
And, of course, Vermont has several sanctuary cities within its borders, and we have a policy of fair and impartial policing throughout our police departments and with the state police that could also be affected by some of what President Trump has said he'd like to do.
That's right. I mean, and the one thing the legal community and the ACLU has called for is for the Attorney General itself to adopt that policy, Attorney General's office. Vermont State Police have that. A number of larger police departments around the state have that. And whether that policy extends to sort of the don't ask, don't tell somebody's resident status is something that I think they would like to see, the advocates would like to see extended sort of statewide.
We've also over the weekend, John, seen an outpouring from, I guess you could say, regular people, you know, not necessarily lawyers, but people who have shown up around the country at airports where people may have been detained, and also in Vermont, sort of spontaneous rallies and protests as well.
That's right. There, you know, in Rutland, people came out. In Burlington, people came out yesterday on Sunday. Rutland itself was, you know, there was opposition there, but then even many of the opponents said, they're here, they're going to be Vermonters, let's help them. And so there was just tremendous, there were tremendous donations of food and clothing and help for people's children and so on, support in that community. And that support has sort of turned to outrage in some quarters about this action.
Well, that situation in Rutland is one area that we've been focusing on here at VPR, and the Syrian refugee program that had just gotten underway, the resettlement, the first two families to arrive, and now it looks like that is absolutely indefinitely on hold.
It is. That program was set to welcome up to 25 Syrians over the next several weeks and months, and then 100 people total, and that's completely put on hold for now. So there's two families there that have arrived. And the question now, I think, is in part, do they stay there where there aren't other Syrians? Does the Office of Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program still keep an office there for just two families? And what happens? Our Nina Keck is in Jordan this week for stories on people who have been left behind, including obviously people who were destined for Vermont. Whether we'll be able to talk to them or not remains to be seen. But she is talking to people in their situation. And she talked to a gentleman named Mohammed Al-Fatha, who fled Syria in January 2013 because of the bombing and war. And he left with his five children, and he's been through this extreme vetting, had conducted two interviews with immigration officials, and had been told he was in the pipeline to come to America. And the news of Trump's order, he says, has devastated his family and the other Syrian refugees he knows. Here's what he had to say.
There's a lot of people. A lot of people got destroyed, got traumatized. Some people, they were ready to leave. They sold their furniture. They turned in their apartment. And all of a sudden, they get a call from the UN saying that things have stopped. These guys got traumatized big time.
As you could understand, if you had been waiting to flee a place in civil war with your family for someplace safe, you would be traumatized.
John, there are a lot of moving pieces to all of this news, and a lot we still don't know, both in terms of what's going to happen at the federal level, but also some of the situations in Vermont. What else is VPR working on right now?
We're looking at what if there are people, students at our universities and state colleges who are affected by this, students and faculty. We're looking at what's happening on our Canadian border. We're looking at the impact on farm workers and who are mainly from Mexico and not related to the specific refugee order we're talking about, but obviously an immigration crackdown could affect them and their employers. And we're going to stay in touch and have reports all week from Nina Keck, who is reporting from Jordan on the people left behind.
VPR News Director John Dillon, thanks.
Thank you, Jane.
We are going to be talking much more about these executive orders and the Vermont reaction this week on Vermont Edition as well. Tomorrow, we're going to be specifically talking about immigration and the situation for Vermont refugees. You can share your questions about that on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm also curious what you listening now would like to know. What questions do you have and what areas of focus are you hoping to hear about on Vermont Edition and on VPR? We'd like to know what you're thinking and questions that you have that perhaps we can work on answers to. You can write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net. Our team sees that. John Dillon sees that. And we will follow up on your questions. Coming up today on the program, we will be celebrating the life and work of Vermont writer Howard Frank Mosier. He died yesterday in Irisburg at the age of 74. If you have a tribute, you can call now 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your thoughts on our Facebook page. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. One of Vermont's most beloved authors has died. Howard Frank Mosier moved to the Northeast Kingdom with his wife Phyllis in 1964 when they were just out of college. They came to teach and they stayed because of the community they found and the stories that came bubbling up around them. Mosier wanted to tell those stories. His fictional version of the kingdom became Kingdom County, and the characters who populated his novels became almost real. They were real in large part. Even their names are memorable. Welcome and Resolved Kinnison, Quebec Bill Bonhomme. His books have traveled to the hands of readers far and wide. Where the Rivers Flow North, A Stranger in the Kingdom, Disappearances, Northern Borders. Howard Frank Mosier, the man, was also well-loved. He had a penchant for self-deprecation, which made him endearing to almost everyone who got to know him. In 2012, he published The Great Northern Express, which recounted tales of a 150-store book tour he arranged himself. In an interview on this program, he read a little from that book, and this is from a chapter entitled Harold Who Calls Ahead.
Hi there. This is the novelist, Howard Frank Mosier. Silence. I soldiered on. May I please speak with your bookstore events coordinator? Yeah, well, that would be me, I guess. Terrific. I'll be publishing my 10th book this summer, and I'm putting together, if you can believe such a thing, a 100-city book tour. Let's see. I'll be in New Mexico in the second week of July. I was hoping we could arrange. Who'd you say this was? Howard Mosier, the novelist? Good grief. Could I be losing momentum already? Harold who? Howard. Howard Frank Mosier. So, are you a local author or what? Well, actually, I'm from Vermont, but Vermont, the events coordinator, who might have been all of 15, could hardly have sounded more outraged if I'd announced I was from Guantanamo. Hey, Harold, I'm with a customer, okay? Email me. Howard. Say what? It's Howard, not Harold. Mercifully for us both, the line went dead.
That was Howard Frank Mosier appearing on Vermont Edition in 2012, reading from his memoir, The Great Northern Express. For the rest of the hour today, we're going to celebrate the life and work of Howard Frank Mosier. The tributes have been pouring in already, and if you'd like to add yours, you can post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. And here with us are two longtime friends of his, the novelist Jeffrey Lent and filmmaker Jay Craven, who adapted four of Howard's novels into movies. Jeffrey, Jay, thank you both very much for being with us today.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jane.
I'm so pleased to have you here, although, of course, the occasion is a sad one. But it's wonderful to be able to celebrate Howard Frank Mosier's life with you and with the so many Vermonters and non-Vermonters who loved him and loved his work. Jay, I'm curious if there's a thought or a memory of Howard that keeps sort of bubbling up for you as you think about him and remember your friend.
Well, I think that his generosity more than anything else, which was articulated so many times to writers that he even never had met but would send him a manuscript and he would take the time to read it and offer a comment. Certainly his generosity to me, the faith that he placed in me, taking his stories and translating them into another medium, necessarily an economical medium where a lot of detail has to be left out. But rendering these larger-than-life characters who simultaneously were so flawed and even self-destructive but heroic and larger-than-life, it was just a pleasure. I got a note this morning from Craig Nova, writer, longtime Putney, Vermont writer who's now teaching in North Carolina, but talking about how there's a way that you can be with someone that is just like unlike anything else or anyone else. And when that person goes, you lose a part of yourself in that process. And I think that's sort of what it was for me with Howard, the nature of the conversations, the laughs, the sort of standing up to authority that was so telling in his characters that he sort of felt at a gut level himself. That, you know, the loss, I think we all feel a bit of loss with Howard because he was so much with us through his characters, but also through his generosity and also through his visits to every corner of the kingdom, every corner of Vermont, all over New England, and was always such a pleasure to share those moments with.
You mentioned his mentorship, and we got notes from a couple of writers who experienced that. Thomas Christopher Green, the president of the Vermont College of Fine Arts, says, "Howard was the most selfless writer I've ever met. He was also a bridge builder between literary people and literary communities. Howard got behind my first novel when I didn't yet have a publisher, and we didn't even know each other. I found his address in the phone book and mailed it to him. He did the same thing for Richard Russo, and we know how that turned out. Howard later introduced me to Richard, who got behind my fourth novel, The Headmaster's Wife, a complicated book that initially had trouble finding a publisher. It later became a bestseller in no small part because of Howard and Richard's support. He was the glue of this Vermont writing community, our dean, someone we all admired and looked up to, especially how he modeled to all of us that writing was not a competitive sport, a friend to all. Last year, when he was nominated for the Vermont Book Award, he told me he didn't want to win and he didn't want to be a finalist. That should go to a younger writer, he said, not an old guy like me. At the ceremony, when Major Jackson won the award, I saw Howard on his feet with a big smile on his face. The room was full of people in black tie and nice dresses. Howard had on his flannel, his jeans, and work boots. He will never be forgotten by any of us who he mentored." And Shay Totten says, "As a young writer in the NEK about to leave for college to study writing, I sent some of my poems to Howard to see if he had any advice to a budding writer-poet. It was early 1986. Within a month, he replied, and I still have that letter, which was encouraging in tone, generous in advice, and thoughtful. It was clear to me that he had actually read what I had sent him, as he cited back lines and images to me. He could have easily dismissed my outreach or sent me a simple best of luck to you note, but he didn't. This handwritten letter is 2 pages long, written on lined yellow legal pad paper. In it, he provided a lengthy but supportive critique of my work. This letter gave me such a confidence boost, as he wanted to be sure that I would continue my path to study poetry, literature, and work every day at being a writer, be it in college or on my own later. His biggest advice was to revise and revise again, noting that it sometimes took him years to write his best stories, and he said some would be rewritten 50 or 60 times. That knowledge, that even strong writers like Mosier had to revise that much, humanized writing in a way that hadn't been done for me before." We're talking about Howard Frank Mosier and hearing from many people who loved his work or loved him or both. And you can share your thoughts by writing to Vermont Edition at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Jeffrey Lent, what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking that word generosity is going to come up over and over again with anyone who interacted with Howard. Just a tremendous, generous soul, gentle spirit, ferocious sense of humor, and in a field of work that's really filled with overstuffed egos, just one of the most genuine human spirits I've ever encountered. Howard's sense of humor and his sense of how to put a person at ease, I think, was a tremendous hallmark of his. I first met him in 2000. I'd driven up to Hardwick to the Galaxy bookstore, which, of course, was Howard's home bookstore, to read for my first novel. And I always like to get to places like that early to check it out and then go for a walk and clear my head. Howard was there waiting for me and inserted himself on my side, and we walked around town, and I very quickly discovered that he had a tremendous gift for making a person very comfortable very quickly, and feeling as if you've just encountered someone that you've somehow always known. That was repeated many times over the years in many different ways, but as recently as last Wednesday, when I drove up to Irisburg with my wife and youngest daughter to visit Howard, my wife was visiting with Howard's wife, Phyllis, and my daughter and I went into the room where Howard was lying on the bed. And he couldn't speak very well at that point, but he looked at my daughter and he pointed at a picture up on the wall and he said to her, "I had a dream that your father was standing up there holding a giant trout." And of course, that put both of us at ease, and I knew that Howard's sense of humor was still deeply, strongly intact. And for those of you who have read his work, you all know the great reverence that Howard holds for trout. And so to be linked with that image was a tremendous honor in just the odd, quirky way that Howard had of honoring people.
I was rereading A Stranger in the Kingdom last night, and yes, you know, if you were a man that his characters wanted to go brook trout fishing with, you were quite a man, and it was much the same for Howard himself. So many people sharing their thoughts with us today, people who knew him personally and who knew him through his work. Sarah says, "I've been fortunate, since my family moved to Irisburg nearly 3 years ago, to live across the road from Howard Mosher and to admire him not only as an author but as a beloved neighbor. Seeing him outside pruning apple trees or inside working at his writing table always gave me a sense of comfort that is hard to describe. My children enjoyed visiting Howard and his wonderful wife Phyllis as much as I did, probably because of the palpable love and warmth in their house." Patrick says, "I met Howard for the first time as a freshman in high school shortly after reading and subsequently watching A Stranger in the Kingdom. I never made the connection, though, as the Mr. Mosher I knew was a kindly gentleman who volunteered his time assisting us high school basketball players in our shooting form. It wasn't until I was a junior that it dawned on me that the man I knew from hours of shooting hoops was the same man I knew through his books. He was an amazing person, and I thoroughly enjoy his works. But most of all, I appreciate his kindness and understanding as a genuinely great human being." And Cora says, "I knew Mr. Mosher because I went to high school with his kids, and I would see him around. He was always very kind to me, always said hello when he would see me in Irisburg. He would always ask how my brother was and where he was stationed at the time. He was very impressed that my brother had made captain and was doing so well in the Army. I'll always remember his sweet, shy smile and the kindness he always showed." And let's hear from Duncan, who's calling in from Johnson. Hi, Duncan. Go right ahead.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Thanks very much. Love you. You'll love your work too, Jeffrey Lent. So I wanted to relay a brief story. Years ago, I owned and operated a blacksmith shop in Fairfield on the Chester Arthur Road. And I was headed back to the house for lunch, and this car pulled up and window rolled down, and a gentleman said, "Can you tell me where the Chester Arthur Breastplate is?" I took one look at him, immediately recognized him, and said, "You're Howard Frank Mosher." And he said, "Yes, I am." I said, "What are you doing up here?" And he said he was perhaps going to take an assignment on the embezzlement of the Bakersfield town clerk. But my dad was a Vermont folklorist and author, and Howard and I had a conversation in the middle of the road, middle of Chester Arthur Road, for a good hour, and it was one of the delights of my life.
Duncan, thanks for your remembrance. Appreciate that. And another author, fellow writer calling in now, Howard Norman. Howard, thank you for calling. I know you were friends with Howard Frank Mosher as well.
Oh, very much. Hello, Jeffrey. Hello, Jay. Yeah, you know, superlatives almost seem like understatements when it comes to Howard, and I'll let other people anecdotally speak about that, who live near him. I had my one moment of literary fame because of Howard. I was standing in front of the Bear Pond bookstore, and a woman came out and said, "You're my favorite author. Will you sign a book?" I said, "Yes." She went back in and brought one of Howard's novels out, which I promptly signed. And then I called Howard up. And I said, you know, I told him what had happened. And in his inimitably understated way, he said, "I hope it was a hardcover." Now, that's a very writerly anecdote. But he was tremendously supportive to me, toward me. I loved him very much. And it's a very, very, very sad day. But I just wanted to say one quick thing, and I think that I was just in Italy and told a bunch of literary folks over there that I was from Vermont, and right away, and I mentioned this to you, Jane, earlier, right away, one of the professors there said, "Howard Frank Mosher." And that was a very lovely moment. So the term regionalist, of course, is reductionist, but that was a moment of international presence that I think happens far more often than Howard would have even recognized or acknowledged. A really, really beautiful, beautiful man with a very big heart.
Well, Howard Norman, thank you for sharing your thoughts and memories, and we're going to talk more about that with Jeffrey Lent and Jay Craven as we continue looking at the life and work of Howard Frank Mosher, this idea of Howard in the world, where his work travels, and how he'll be remembered. You can share your thoughts with us, your experiences, your memories. Post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Let's listen again to Mosher in his own voice. Here he is relating a special encounter he had with wildlife while on a book tour.
On my way back from the McDonald's next to the Comfort Inn in White River Junction, I stepped right in between a mother moose and a calf moose before I knew what I had done. And that's the one place you don't want to be when it comes to moose. So the only thing I could think to do was to offer my cup of Newman's Own and my bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit to the mother moose. And I said, "Here, moose." And the mother moose, who by then was pawing the ground and snorting, was not impressed. Well, in the meantime, some Chinese tourists who were just boarding a bus over at the Comfort Inn evidently thought this was part of their day's entertainment because they began to videotape the confrontation between me and the mother moose.
I can happily report, though, that Howard made a mad dash back to the motel while the tourists continued to videotape his exploits. He was safe. Mother and calf also safe. We're talking about Howard Frank Mosher. Megan says, "I had an unabashed crush on Howard. I think it was his blue work shirt, khaki pants, sensible walking shoes, and seemingly endless supply of generosity and patience. I remember the first time many years ago when I haltingly asked Howard for his autograph in a book. He was kind and self-deprecating. I was then lucky enough to become his friend. Howard was encouraging, thoughtful, and even gracious enough to add his name to the letterhead of Hands, Helping and Nurturing Diverse Seniors, a small nonprofit I manage. He'll be missed tremendously by writers and readers alike. Cheers to a life well lived and one that ended too soon for all of Howard's stories to be shared with all of us." More to come. You're listening to Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're remembering writer and Vermonter Howard Frank Mosier, who died yesterday. We're talking with two of his friends and artistic colleagues, filmmaker Jay Craven and novelist Jeffrey Lent. Howard Frank Mosier and his wife Phyllis moved to the Northeast Kingdom for a temporary stint as teachers. But here, Howard relates the story of what kept him there to write about this remote area of Vermont.
Soon after we arrived, our landlady told us a story, and this was a transformative experience. She said that during the Depression, she and her husband owned a hill farm near the Canadian border, and they were losing it. They just couldn't make a go of it, and so she decided to put to use the only skill her father had ever taught her, and that was how to make moonshine whiskey. Well, one night as she was running off the White Lightning by the local brook, she looked up, and by lantern light, she said that she saw across the stream what she described as a pair of city shoes with a man wearing a city suit standing in them. And she knew immediately he was a revenuer. She said, "You can arrest me if you want to, but I want you to know that if you do, we're going to lose our farm." When she looked up again, he was gone. Well, years went by, decades went by, and she and her husband kept the farm, put their kids through high school and the University of Vermont. Then her husband died, and she moved into the village of Orleans. And a few years before Phyllis and I came to town, there was a knock on her door. She answered the door, and she recognized the man standing there in the city shoes and the city suit. And she smiled and said, "Have you come to arrest me again?" And he said to her, "No, ma'am, this time I've come to marry you." And he did. And they were very happy together, as she had been with her first husband. And then he died. So when she finished her story, she looked at us and she said, "You know, Howard and Phyllis, I've had a good life, nothing to complain about, but I reckon I just ain't had good luck keeping my husbands alive." And at that point, almost 50 years ago now, Phyllis and I looked at each other, and we knew that I just didn't want to write the stories of the kingdom, but that one way or another, I was going to write the stories of the kingdom.
The story that launched a career, and aren't we grateful for it? Listeners, if you have a memory of Howard Frank Mosier or a thought on his writing, you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. Jay Craven, you liked Howard's work enough and felt strongly enough about it that you wanted to adapt several of his books to the screen, the big screen. What is it about his writing that you think has such appeal?
Well, I think, first of all, the books cover new territory each time. I mean, I was able to explore different themes, different characters, different sense of place in each of the stories. And so I had always, in my dreams of becoming a filmmaker, wanted to make films based right where I was, which was the Northeast Kingdom. And I'd worked in the arts in the Northeast Kingdom, having started Catabout Arts in 1975, based on this idea of community and culture. So Howard's work was a natural for me. The other thing is that I was raised by a beloved Texas grandmother who introduced me to films and had a passion for Westerns and Tennessee Williams pictures. Anything with gunslingers and distraught Southern women, she was there. So when I discovered Disappearances, which was the first of Howard's stories that I read, I really saw it as a Western in a way. It was a frontier film, and that's very much a theme that runs through all of Howard's work, is this sense of the frontier with an outlaw culture living in the margins and these larger-than-life characters that face questions of a fading way of life and the extinction of who they've been and what they've been. And where Shane I could see Shane in Stranger in the Kingdom as the character who comes into town to sort of tame the outlaws. And I could see in the film The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, the John Wayne character sort of facing the end of his way of life and sort of yielding to Jimmy Stewart. And I saw that in Disappearances and also certainly in Where the Rivers Flow North. So this notion of the frontier, these flawed characters that nonetheless lived by a certain ethic and survived with a certain state of grace, all of that just appealed to me. And in each of the films, I could find something personal, and I think that a lot of Howard's readers can. you know, again, I was raised by grandparents. Northern Borders spoke to me very directly. I even was sent away on a train by myself, the same way the character in Northern Borders, young Austin Kittredge, arrives in the kingdom. So I found personal connection. I found a connection to the place where I was, and making place-based film was really what I wanted to do. And I loved the fun and the adventure and also the complex characterization and the themes of the frontier.
Kathy says, Howard Frank Mosher visited the CCV literature class I attended some years ago, generously interacting with students. I've loved his interpretation of Vermont's people and its character. His novels have helped to keep me centered, reminding me of what I love about my community and my state. Kayla tweeted, I'm grateful for his work celebrating all that the Northeast Kingdom is. And Claire Benedict of Bear Pond Books in Montpelier says, Howard was charming and lovely and a true friend to independent booksellers. We will always remember him for that, as well as his wonderful storytelling. He will truly be missed at Bear Pond Books. Gwen says, I'm a seventh-generation Vermonter living in Woodbury. I never did have the opportunity to meet Mr. Mosher, but I must say he was one of my best friends. I'm not sure what I will do without him. And Lynette says, we moved to the Northeast Kingdom in 2000, and the first book I happened to read was A Stranger in the Kingdom. I delighted in learning what a gore was and learning that the Red Sox were well-loved here, too. I will always count myself incredibly fortunate to have read Waiting for Teddy Williams in that brief moment of time just before the curse of the Bambino was broken. Lots of people sharing their reflections and their thoughts and gratitude for Howard Frank Mosher. You can read some of them on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Jeffrey Lent, you told me that you've started thinking about Howard Frank Mosher's place in a line of writers and how he sort of fits into a larger picture of writing about New England. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, I would. I really have just been thinking about this. And one of the things that we often don't really discuss, we talk about Howard's sense of humor and his sense of place and his intensely vivid characters. A lot of those characters are actually very dark and are very dark and twisted and troubled. And I was starting to think about this and realize that it's kind of a large structured theme, but northern New England, Vermont, and northern New Hampshire are sort of the youngest parts of New England in terms of white settlement. And one of the results of that was that the residents of southern New England looked upon this region as the place of darkness where the French and the heathen Indians would suddenly come swooping down out of here. And so, of course, it was those southern New Englanders that started to settle up into this country. And I think brought with them a sense of that strangeness, that fear, that darkness that exists here. And I ran across an early Nathaniel Hawthorne story that's set up in the Crawford Notch. It's quite bizarre along those lines. But I'm going to jump ahead and talk about briefly how I see the connection between the wonderful, strange characters that inhabit the poetry of Robert Frost and seeing Howard's work in that lineage of writing out of northern New England. I think there's a streak of darkness and strangeness that just works through this particular region and has for hundreds of years. And when I started looking at Howard's work that way, I just saw it in a much, much larger picture.
Do you think he gets enough credit for that, for the darkness in his work? I mean, even I was reading last night, as I said, A Stranger in the Kingdom, and, you know, the characters, there is humor, but you're right, absolutely a darkness to many of them and to the stories.
Well, I think Howard is one of the great humorists also of the last 50 years. and is rightly celebrated for the humor that he brings. It's a little complicated for me because I've read all of his work, and I've also spent so much time talking with him, and his humor in person was much more dark than he often allowed it to show on the page. So I started to see that humor more darkly. He loved talking about different ways to effectively poach his beloved trout, for example. dynamite being the, you know, favorite weapon of choice. You know, so he had that sense of humor, and he let it out as recently as just this fall. We had a email conversation about why he wondered if it was psychopathic of him to find humor in such dark subjects. And I told him I thought it was really holding on to the delight and sense of humor that a child has, where they haven't yet learned appropriate responses to situations, meaning adult responses, mm-hmm. where they would laugh if they saw, you know, the classic person slip on a banana peel, for example. Adults try to hold that humor in, and the child would laugh. So I don't know. We talked back and forth about that, about the place of humor and darkness, and how close tragedy and comedy, of course, are so deeply intertwined and so closely connected to each other.
Well, there's certainly so much more to say about Howard Frank Mosier, and I'm going to read a few more emails and take another call. But I want to thank you, Jeffrey Lent and Jay Craven, for taking the time today to talk about your friend, Howard Frank Mosier. I know this is a loss for you, as it is for his family, certainly, and for the many people who loved him. And I really appreciate you coming on the show to tell us what you think about him and about his work. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Jane.
We got a note from Astrid who says, my mother worked in a bookshop in Bristol where I grew up, and I attended many of Howard's book talks. Even at the age of 11 and 12, I was impressed not only by his writing, but the softness and ease with which he connected with all ages. I sent Howard a few illustrations with some story ideas when I was still only 12 years old and received a page-long handwritten letter shortly after. It was kind, thoughtful, and encouraging. He's still one of my favorite authors, and the news of his passing breaks my heart. He will be missed. And on the line with us now is Dee Dee Cummings, the founder of Green Writers Press and a friend of Howard's. Hi, Dee Dee. What are you thinking about today?
Hi, Jane. I hope you can hear me okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Oh, it's a very sad day for literary Vermont, and I thought what Jeffrey and Jay said was so beautiful, and you know, I really don't have that much to add. I just wanted to, I was, you know, invited to call in, and I'm really honored to have worked with Howard very closely. As a publisher, he also supported my poetry, my writing. He was so excited when I got a book contract for that. And Robin MacArthur and I worked on contemporary Vermont fiction, and the first story we wanted to include was Howard's story, Kingdom County Come. It's the last story in the anthology, and I read it last night, Jane, like you were reading, and I just wept. It's so gorgeous.
Oh, well, I appreciate, Dee Dee, you sharing your thoughts with us and your memories of Howard. Talking today about Howard Frank Mosier, who died yesterday. Kate and Leon shared a memory of when Howard spoke to the League of Vermont Writers in 2006. They say Howard gave a colorful description of first moving to the Northeast Kingdom. He also mentioned his way to deal with unfavorable reviews. Take them out to the barn, tack them to the outside wall, and blast them with a shotgun. Not recommended if you live in town. Howard's slide presentation that day included a picture of his barn wall. Greg in Salt Lake City says, when I get homesick, I pull out Northern Borders, and I'm soon back in the hardscrabble Northeast Kingdom, accompanied by such rich characters that only Howard Frank Mosier could conjure. I had the great fortune of meeting Mr. Mosier when he came to Salt Lake City on his book tour for Walking to Gatlinburg. I sat for an hour and listened to him tell stories of the kingdom, of writing about its characters and rugged beauty, and reading passages. It was an evening of pure magic. And Sue says, I grew up in the kingdom, but live in Brandon now, I always looked forward to Howard's visits to our bookstore and made sure I got there early so we could talk about the kingdom and I could guess the inspirations for some of his characters. Occasionally, they were family members. We both loved the kingdom, and I envied that he was still there and I wasn't. We both agreed there was no place like it. Don says, beautiful soul that brought the kingdom's beauty to the world. It's been a pleasure meeting him and knowing such a great man lived in my neighborhood in Irisburg. He brought such joy to the world. Well, we're remembering Howard Frank Mosier today. Share your thoughts at vpr.net. The writer died yesterday. That's it for today. Tomorrow, we get back to politics and the effect of President Trump's far-reaching executive orders on immigration. They rocked the country last week, and the reaction has been widespread and furious. We'll look at what we know about the orders and the impact here in Vermont. You can send us your comments or your questions. Write to Vermont Edition at vpr.net and listen live tomorrow at noon. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.